Brad, what have you done now?
Ooh, that was a new one. You are not calling a duck. Oh, come admit you love the Feeny call. Now, I have a feeling we're not going to be together that much longer, so you've got to admit it before it's too late. Mr. Feeny? Mr. Feeny! Mr. Feeny! Mr. Feeny! Feeny. Okay.
I love the Feeny call.
I had a feeling you'd feel that way, so I have this made for you.
Bone chilling, Mr. Matthews.
Hey, Feeny, look, it's Eric doing Mission Impossible. Okay, enough of the love fest.
But, can you do me a favor? What have you done now?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Brad Gilmore Show on demand. I'm your host, Brad Gilmore, and if you couldn't guess who our guest is from that opening monologue, if you will, the opening intro, our guest today is none other than Mr. William Daniels, a.k.a. Mr. Feeny. Oh, can you believe this? That is right. The man who we saw oh so many times is on TV, on Boy Meets World. This man is going to join me here on the show today. He is the author of There I Go Again. He talks about how he got some of his iconic roles like Kit, Mr. Feeny, John Adams, Dr. Craig from St. Elsewhere. He talks about it all in this book. And I saw that Mr. Feeny recently, or Mr. Daniels recently, he foiled a burglary. He did all these things, and I said, you know, it would be awesome to be able to talk to Mr. Feeny, the one and only, you know? And I reached out. I said, you know, I would love to talk to William Daniels, and I was lucky enough to be granted the interview request. So I'm going to play the interview here in just a minute. It is with his wife, Bonnie Bartlett, as well. She joined us on the call. Bonnie Bartlett, a star in her own right. You'd definitely recognize her if you saw her. She was on Boy Meets World. She actually played the woman that Mr. Feeny married. She was on St. Elsewhere. They shared a lot of their success together, which I think is awesome. But Mr. Feeny now is 91 years of age. He's 91 years young. And so I was so thankful and happy that I got the opportunity to talk to him here. And we talk about Boy Meets World. We talk about being John Adams. We talk about even him returning as Mr. Feeny in Girl Meets World, which admittedly I've never seen, but for the purposes of this interview, I looked up some of his clips, and it's crazy how much all the characters, they look like they really haven't aged. Sean Hunter's got a beard. Corey's got some crow's feet. Mr. Feeny kind of looks like the same age. I want to go back and revisit that series. I don't think it's running anymore, but I would love to go back and look at Girl Meets World and judge it on the Boy Meets World scale. Because when I was a kid, man, Boy Meets World was one of those shows that my sister and I used to watch together. My neighbor and I used to watch together. My best friends from elementary school, we used to watch it together. And Feeny was the guy. For me, Mr. Feeny, William Daniels was born in 1927, my grandmother in 1926, my grandfather in 1919. So he reminded me of my grandparents who I saw every day, hung out with every day, and they were really important to me growing up. This is actually right here. This is, that's my grandma. It's my grandmother back like a decade ago telling me that on the phone. So I've always, you know, held them near and dear to me. So Mr. Feeny was kind of like that guy, and I looked at him like a parent. I know it sounds crazy, but I looked at Mr. Feeny as a parent, and I'll post a picture here on Twitter. All y'all know I'm a wrestling guy, work with Booker T, Reality Wrestling, host ESPN's Hall of Fame with Booker T, and three nights a week on ESPN 97.5. And when I was a kid, I was 7 years old, I got WrestleMania 2000. the video game on N64. And what was cool about WrestleMania 2000 was you could finally create your own characters. You could create your own wrestlers. And they had all these templates you could follow, or you could just kind of go with the flow. And so I would make all kinds of people. You know, I'd made, you know, myself. I made, you know, my neighbor. I made whoever would come to mind. I would make them on the game. And one of the characters that I had created for the video game was Mr. Feeny. He was the only one from, you know, television or movies that I created, because I was like, man, Mr. Feeny was that dude. So he was a wrestler. He was one of my creator wrestlers on WrestleMania 2000. I didn't tell him that because probably he'd think I was, one, crazy, and two, I don't think he'd know what an N64 was. So that was kind of how much he meant to me. And he was kind of like, I don't know, he was a role model in a lot of ways. And I think to a lot of us, he was a role model. And he was the real boy. You know what I mean? And I loved Boy Meets World. It's streaming on Hulu right now. And I caught up on some episodes. And I just remember how important Feeny's character was. You know, William Daniels' character was to that role and to that series. I don't think we would be talking about Boy Meets World all these years later if it wasn't for Mr. Feeny. He was the straight man. And Corey and Sean and Topanga and Eric, they couldn't play off of him. You know, if they didn't have him to play off of, the comedy wouldn't work in the show. They needed the moral compass. They needed the straight man. They needed the voice of reason who could also deliver the comedic line when he had to in a straight deadpan kind of way. And that's what William Daniels did as Mr. Feeny. And I think that's why, more than anybody else really from that series, it was Mr. Feeny who stuck with all of us growing up in the, if you were a child of the late 80s, early 90s, this was the guy. This was the guy. And it's one of those times, you know, I've had the privilege of speaking with a lot of people on the show over the years, over the several years that I've had the Brad Gilmore show, but Mr. Feeny was definitely one that I was talking to, and, you know, he told me, you can call me Feeny. So that's why I keep referring to him as Mr. Feeny. But Feeny was one of the guys who, as I'm talking to him, and here he is 91 years of age, the oldest person ever on the Brad Gilmore show on demand, my oldest person ever I've ever interviewed in the history of my career. But he was so sharp, and he was one of the guys who, while I'm talking to him, I completely fanboyed out, and I couldn't believe I was talking to Mr. Feeny. You know, it was recently, Booker was a few months back, but Booker was a guest on the Steve Austin show, and I helped set it all up so that he and Steve could talk to each other and through Skype, and I was there, and I was talking to Steve Austin through Skype on the phone, trying to get everything set up, and I didn't even think about it. I'm like, oh, wow, you know, this is a guy who I kind of idolized too as a kid and would dress up as, and I'd crack open the treetop apple juices pretending I was, you know, Steve Austin cracking open a Budweiser, but I didn't get the fanboy vibes when I talked to him. But when I talked to Feeny, when I talked to people from his ilk, someone who, like I said, I looked up to, I know I'm saying that at nauseam, but he was really the guy for me. I had a complete fanboy moment, and I made sure to tell him. And it was so much fun to have him on the show and his wife. We talk about how he got the role of Boy Meets World, why he almost rejected it. He almost was not Mr. Feeny. And we talk about that. We talk about the fact that he was a child actor in the 1930s in the Great Depression era, and why he chose not to share or impart any of his wisdom as a child actor to the children that he was now working with on Boy Meets World. And we talk about him being Kit. This man was Kit. Hello, Michael. That was a bad Kit impression, but he was Kit the car from Knight Rider. And he actually voiced Kit in that most recent Walmart commercial during the Super Bowl, where, you know, here in my car, where it had all the great movie cars from, you know, all the generations. And Kit was a TV car, but Kit was included. It had the Jurassic Park car. It had the Batmobile. It had the DeLorean. It had, you know, the van from Dumb and Dumber. It had any iconic movie/television car was featured in this commercial. And I was like, man, you know, how awesome was that to, at 90 years old, still be involved and doing things on a consistent basis? And go look up his IMDb page. The guy's been in everything. He's worked with everyone. He's worked with Denzel. He's worked with anybody you can imagine. And it's just really cool. I'm fanboying out consistently here. But it was just really cool to be able to talk to the man, the myth, the legend. You know, we talk about it on Hall of Fame with Booker and I. He talks about this time that he met or that he saw Ric Flair for the first time. And he and Stevie were somewhere, I think, you know, working in Global, or they were here in Houston, Dallas, somewhere. And they were talking to this old veteran, and he was kind of giving the lowdown on the business. And, you know, Ric Flair walked in, and, you know, he had the Rolex watch, he had the alligator shoes, he had the custom-made suit, you know, he had the hair, the sunglasses, the Rolex, the, you know, diamond rings. And the veteran turned to Booker and Stevie, and he said, "Yeah, you see that right there? That's Ric Flair. That's the real boy there." And for me, William Daniels, a.k.a. Mr. Feeney, that's the real boy there. So without further ado, let's bring on the man, the myth, the legend. Let's bring on William Daniels, the author of There I Go Again. Let's bring on Mr. Feeney. And here he is. He's joining me now, the author of There I Go Again, How I Became Mr. Feeney, John Adams, Dr. Craig, Kit, and many others, Mr. William Daniels. Sir, how are you doing today?
I'm fine, Brad. How are you?
I am great. Thank you so much for taking the time to join me here on the air. I'm so excited to talk to you. You know, for me, you were my role model growing up. You know, when I'm a kid of the 90s, so this is Mr. Feeney. This is everything to me.
I see. Yeah. Well, you can call me Feeney.
Yeah, I can call you Feeney. That's an honor. But sir, let's talk about that, because I read your book, There I Go Again. It chronicles your entire career, and you were a child actor, born in New York, 1927. I'm such a fan of everybody from that generation. My grandmother born in 26, and there's just something about the generation of that time. Talk to me about how growing up and how much of an influence your mother was on your career.
Well, she was very important. She put both my sister Jackie and I in show business. She had had a relative who was involved in show business. I think she always had wondered about being in it herself, but she never had the opportunity to. So at the first moment that she could, with her son and daughter, she got us singing and dancing and at a studio called Sonny Hoey's. And then pretty soon she kept looking in the papers and seeing where there were auditions for kids. It was in the 30s, you know, during the Depression. So child performers were rather popular at the time, probably because they didn't get paid. Right. So she took us over to audition for Kennedy. Kennedy, for the New York Daily Mirror, and his brother who ran the auditions. We went over there and we tap danced for him at an audition. He said, no, this is radio, you know. We can't use tap dancing now if you sang. So she took us home and sang, taught us to sing. We went in, and he said, no, not in unison, in harmony, you know. So she took us back home, taught me the harmony, brought us back in, and he said, yeah, that's it. So then we were on the air, WOI, I believe it was in New York, in the 30s, late 30s. And we've been performers ever since. My sister did A.O. Annie in Oklahoma, in London. And I have been rather luckily and fortunately able to have earned a living as an actor and singer, performer, ever since. So one day, just on an impulse, without thinking about it, without looking up anything or, you know, just on impulse, I started writing about my life in the business. And out came this fairly slim book about, you know, where I started and what I've been through. And when I finished it, I turned it in, and the publisher took it and printed it up, and there we were.
There we were. Now I'm talking to you about it. And I found the book so interesting, especially, I couldn't wait to get to the Boy Meets World section, obviously, because I'm a kid of the 90s. And I was fascinated by the notion that you almost didn't take that role. You had kind of reservations about portraying this teacher, George Feeney. Is that right?
Well, it was the name that bothered me. I thought it was kind of a funny name, Feeney. So at first I turned it down, but the producer, Michael Jacobs, asked me to have a meeting with him. And I said, well, you know, I turned it down because I thought I didn't want to make fun of teachers. I respect them very much. I think they're underpaid and underappreciated and terribly important to our society. And he said, well, let me tell you, I based this character on a mentor of mine who was my teacher in high school. He said, and I had the utter respect for him, and I will have the utter respect for this part. I will not make fun of Feeney, even though the name does sound that way. It will be written with respect. Well, that's all I needed to know. And I said, okay, let's give it a go.
You gave it a go, and it became such an iconic role for you. But you being a child actor and now working, when you started out and now working around child actors, why did you feel it was important to let them kind of make their own mistakes? Because to me, in the book, you kind of talk about how you just let them do them and you didn't really talk much about your early career or give them
direction. I was acting alongside these children who, as a matter of fact, were just... ran into at a meeting up in Seattle, and now they're grown up and in their 40s. But they were kids at the time, and I felt I knew enough to let them find their own way. I wasn't about to become a mentor or give them any advice or anything like that. They were young, they were happy and frivolous about the work, and that was fine with me. I just hung out in my dressing room until it was time for me to go on and do the show. And I did the show with them. I never coached them. I never criticized them. I just tried to appreciate them.
And did you find it hard being a stage actor, performer? Was it a hard thing? Because I know you didn't done television before, but a 3-camera sitcom with a bunch of children in front of a live studio audience, was that a difficult thing for you to try to do? Or did you embrace the live audience because you came from the theater?
Well, no, it was kind of a difficult thing to do because in those days they had this warm-up guy who would get out before you began the show to what he tried to do, which was warm up the audience and get them to laugh. And I thought it was a terrible idea because he made it clear to them they were expected to laugh a lot. So all you had to do was come in the doorway and they were laughing. And I just didn't think that was very smart of them, of the director. But anyway, that's the way it went. And the show, because the kids were talented, we got along extremely well. And I had a lot of fun. I respect Michael Jacobs and his writing. And he was right. He wrote Feeney in a very respectable manner. And to my surprise, the role became rather... famous or iconic, you might even say. We still get fan mail from people about Mr. Feeney and how important he seemed to have been in their life, particularly when they became teachers.
Yeah, for me, it was Mr. Feeney was everything, growing up. I was like, why can't I have a teacher this cool? I need a teacher who will instill in me life lessons, talk me through breakups. I didn't have the go-to guy that Corey and Topanga and others had. So I was always envious of their relationship. But would you say that was your most iconic role throughout your career, or was Kit or Dr. Craig? What was the role that you feel like connected most with the audience?
John Adams. In 1776. No, Bonnie?
Bill. Feeney. Feeney? Definitely.
Okay. I guess it was Mr. Feeney.
Well, your wife there, Bonnie, broke in. She said Feeney definitely. But why do you think?
Well, 1776, yes. John Adams, yes. Also, I would say Adams and Feeney on an equal level with the fans that want to see him and meet him and talk to him. And they feel, a lot of people felt that they became history teachers because of 1776. And that changed their lives. And
No, not 1776.
Yeah, because of the history. They learned about history.
Oh, about history. I thought you were going to say Mr. Feeney.
Well, Mr. Feeney, because he's a lot of people became teachers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We are absolutely, totally surprised that all of this has happened.
Mm-hmm.
How so? What do you mean? Why so surprised? I mean, you put in the work. You're very talented. Both of you are, believe, the second couple ever to win Emmys on the same night for the same television show. It's extremely successful. Mm-hmm. But why surprised, Bonnie?
I it's popular culture, and we come from a background of theater and what can I say, kind of a serious kind of thing. And popular culture is incredible. It's an incredible thing. I'm so thankful for it, because if it does teach, because see, I think the theater and I think all the arts and all the things teach people things. I think people learn about everything from all the arts. And I would not have expected a television show to do that, but it has. Other shows too, I suppose, but definitely Boy Meets World has turned out to be a teaching thing where, as you said, people learn life lessons, and people, kids have grown up and idolized Mr. Feeney, and yet you say he's cool because it's popular culture, and it's just amazing to us that it's taken off like that.
I mean, but he was the quintessential everything for my generation, at least. You know, when I told a couple of people around the station, hey, I'm gonna have William Daniels on, Mr. Feeney, people lost their minds. Everyone was green with envy that I got to talk to you, Mr. Daniels. And let me ask you this: was it fun though to have Bill? Was it fun to have the opportunity to work with your wife, Bonnie, on Boy Meets World, as well as St. Ed elsewhere? Was that a fun thing to be able to do?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Because first of all, she's a good actress. And secondly, we got along very well, you know, both of us. We're just, you know, we've never had any problems with being jealous of each other's abilities. I'm thankful for hers, respectful of her ability. When we work together, I try not to say anything in terms of opinions or anything, because she doesn't need it. She's a wonderful actress. And yes, we've had, what did we have, 2 Emmys, Bonnie?
Yeah. Yeah.
2 Emmys.
It's great.
It's incredible.
But
it's
we
incredible.
Didn't expect it. We never expected any of this.
No. I'll tell you something about that. I've had experience with Jerry Roth on musicals that he did. You never know what you've got until you're in front of an audience. And the same goes in television. You don't really know at the beginning. I don't think anybody. There'll be a lot of people who'll take successes of a show, but nobody will take credit for a show that flops. My experience. So I think you don't know what you've got. Audience, feel their warmth and their attention, and it's a wonderful experience.
Absolutely, but I really do think you talk about people, you know, they'll take credit for the successes and not so much for the failures, but I think you have to take a lot. I don't know if you do it, and I don't know if your wife takes the credit for it, but you have to take so much of the credit, in my opinion, for the success of Boy Meets World. Without the Mr. Feeney character, I don't think the show would have been the success that it was. And I'm not just saying that because I'm talking to you. I'm saying that because that was the character that everybody idolized and looked to and looked up to. I can't imagine what Boy Meets World would have been like without Mr. Feeny. And let me ask you this, going back and revisiting the role, because Boy Meets World went off the air in 2000, much to my dismay and my household's dismay, but you were able to relive the role with the Girl Meets World spinoff series, and you had, I believe, a few episodes, four or five episodes on there. How was that? What was that experience like?
Well, it was very interesting. You know, new kids, a nice show, as always, with Michael Jacobs. And I just have to say I enjoyed working with them, and I think they liked seeing me there.
Absolutely. I mean, it was fun to see.
Because the girls didn't know Bill at all.
Right.
The two girls didn't know Bill at all. They didn't know the character. They hadn't watched. I think they probably had them watch some shows, but they didn't know who he was at all. They had no relationship with him.
And yeah, I'm sure they weren't even born.
The two girls came up to me going, "Feeny, Feeny, Feeny." And I thought, oh my God, what have I got involved with it here?
There you go again, right?
There you go again.
But, you know, it's so crazy to have, though, more than one iconic role. I mean, and that's what the book was really about, writing about these iconic roles and these incredible moments in your career. Feeny, John Adams. But talk about being Kit. I found it interesting that you never had really a one-on-one with David Hasselhoff throughout the entirety of that series. You were always just doing vocal recordings.
Yes, that's right. I just go into a recording studio and do mine. And we only met at Christmas, I think it was. And he said, you know, I don't know how they put this together, but it seems to work. You talk as the car, and I talk to you, and you talk back as the car. I said, well, you know, I never thought that would work in the first place. A car that talks? My God, I thought that was kind of ridiculous. But I must say, I'll tell you, I only went into that because I had done a show with Roberta Peters and I for the producer. And he said, would you come in and read this material for me? I'm going to New York to pitch it to sponsors. And so I went in and I looked at it and I said, this is the voice of a car? He said, yeah. I thought, holy mackerel. And so I decided, well, I think I did all that. I won't bore you with performing. He wanted me to talk one way or another way or another. I finally said, well, just let me read this, please. And then I went home, and 2 or 3 weeks later, he said it sold him.
But, you know, the thing is, though, just like Mr. Feeny, iconic, I think the Kit, the car, is one of the most iconic entertainment cars of all time. I think you have to put it in the top 3 or 5, right? You know, you have the Back to the Future car.
No, I agree with you. That again, has become amazing, and it's because all the things that the car did, they can do now, and many, many more things.
Yeah, I know. Back in the day, Kit was like a novelty, and now people are driving Teslas.
But now, they can do so much now that Kit is like old-fashioned.
But still, you know, when you think of Kit, the DeLorean from Back to the Future, or the Batmobile, I think those are the three, maybe even Herbie the Love Bug. I think those are like the most iconic cars of all time. So you have this iconic voice, too. I mean, I just saw it in a Walmart Super Bowl commercial. They had Kit the car there, you know, in
the
commercial.
Right. Oh, yeah, that's right.
How was that? Was that awesome to be involved in a Super Bowl commercial here in 2019?
Well, I know. Listen, I just went in and recorded it.
But it was funny, the recording, because the guy who had written the commercial was trying to direct Bill and tell him what to do and everything. And finally, the director said, Bill, just do it the way you would do it. He said it one line. That's it. That's it. That's all. You know, don't do anything with it. Don't try to say it's the future or anything like that. Just say the future, Michael. And that's what he did, and that's what they wanted.
And it was, and you know what? I actually had this conversation with somebody months ago when I first saw the commercial. I said, I think that is maybe the greatest commercial of all time. Not only do you have all these incredible movie cars, but I understand, you know, so many times you watch a commercial and you have no idea what it's advertising. And that one, I understood exactly what it was advertising, but it was engaging with all the vehicles. So props to you on that one as well. But, you know, I appreciate you so much for taking the time. The book is available now, There I Go Again by William Daniels. It's 2019. Your career spanned, at least on film, for several decades, going back into the early 1950s. And obviously you had stage acting. You were a child performer. You look back at all the things that have changed in the world of entertainment throughout your career. Is there something that you're singularly most proud of? A single role, a single moment, anything that you look back on at all your decades of entertainment and say, I'm so happy I was able to do that?
Well, there was a play by Edward Albee called The Zoo Story, in which I played this young man who sat on a bench, and it was just a two-character drama. And when I first read it, I thought, oh, geez, you know, this guy who walks behind me and says, I've been to the zoo, does all the talking, and I just sit there. But it became quite obvious to me very soon that the audience related to me and saw him through my eyes, and that this was a very important role. And indeed it was. And, you know, I was recognized. I received awards, all kinds of things. And wherever I played it, whether America or here or wherever, they saw this play through this fellow who sat on the bench, about this strange man who accosted him, because they all recognized that kind of moment that might take them in their lives, where a stranger came by and it was kind of frightening and a little threatening.
It was like the first play about the haves and the have-nots. Mm-hmm. And wherever he did it, South America, wherever he did it, the audiences, even though they didn't maybe understand English or whatever, anyway, they were incredible. It was an incredible play. Edward Albee's first play. This is before Virginia Woolf, you know, his first play. An incredibly breakthrough, I guess you'd call it, play. As I say, one of the first things on stage about the haves and the have-nots. And it was just, and Bill was the haves. And the guy, Jerry, was the have-not. So a brilliant play and brilliant subject matter. And it was amazing.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, it's great to be able to look back and know that you did something that you could take around the world and it resonated with everybody, yeah. Whether they spoke the language or not. That is one of those stories that's right. Easily connectable. But, you know, Mr. Daniels, I want to thank you so much for taking the time. This was an absolute treat for me to be able to speak with you, somebody who is a role model for me and so many others. And I just hope that you know, and I'm sure that you do, that there are so many people who are my age in their 20s and even 30s who idolized you and looked to you for everything in their lives. And it was an absolute pleasure and a treat. And I appreciate every single moment of this interview. I really do.
Well, I found it very enjoyable. Thank you, Brad.
All right. Well, that is William Daniels. The book is available. There I Go Again. You can find it on Amazon, Audible, wherever books are sold. Bonnie and Mr. Daniels, thank you so much for taking the time.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
No, very good, Bill. You're getting better.
I'm getting better, yeah.
You did excellent.
Oh, Brian, what have you done now?